Hello and welcome to episode 10 of the Tribune podcast. The Bundesliga campaign is only days away, so what better subject to pick for our 10th episode than the coming campaign? Today I'm joined by my esteemed colleagues, Davis van Apdorp and Ross Dunbar. Guys, how are you?
Good.
Good.
Fantastic. Men of few words, but strong words all in all. Guys, let's just get straight into this. I think the most logical thing is to start with the top of the table. That's probably where the most intrigue for the league on an international scale probably lies. So it makes sense to start there. And I mean,
although there's been the same winner of the Bundesliga the last 4 years, so maybe not as much intrigue as they probably want.
That's very true. Well, that's all up for debate this coming season. And so let's just jump straight into it and have a look at, well, Ross, why don't you start us off? Is this going to be a top two run away with it this season? Is it going to be top three? And is it going to be Bayern at the very top of that?
No, I didn't think it's going to be a top three. I think we've got three very, very strong sides, Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund and Bayer Leverkusen. I think it's certainly quite an interesting dynamic going into the season, because there's no way that Bayern are going to be able to maintain the consistency and the intensity that they had under Pep Guardiola. It's just unrealistic expectation of Carlo Ancelotti, who generally doesn't have a very good record of winning league championships, generally has his success in the Champions League, of course. So I think the interesting thing is whether there will be an opportunity for other teams to take advantage of that. You also have the dynamic of Dortmund having lost three of its real core players, and Leverkusen, who are stronger with more depth. And barring the typical injury implosion that they tend to have, they have a strong enough squad to certainly contend Dortmund for second. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it pans out and maybe whether we see a more open title race in comparison to previous seasons.
I think it's interesting you mentioned Leverkusen's squad, because I think their squad is great. I don't think that's ever been their issue. I don't have any confidence in Roger Schmidt being the coach that takes them to the next level. I think it's going to be somebody else. I mean, Schmidt, sure, he had success, a little success in years past, but I mean, since he's been appointed, he hasn't made Leverkusen that much better. And of course, there was that whole snafu with his suspension last year with that game against Dortmund where he refused to go to the stands. I think he was very astute in recognizing which players were in form, but I think that's managerial 101. I mean, I don't think his system is really that special. I just don't think he's the right man to take them to the next level, to get them not only to contend at the Bundesliga and the top of the Bundesliga, but also to get them into later stages of the Champions League. So I still think it's a two-horse race, and it's interesting that you mentioned Ancelotti too, because he has as many Champions League titles as he's had as league titles in his career. So if Tuchel can get his squad working and really work on his rotation, I think Dortmund could be a very, very dangerous team this year.
Yeah, it's interesting how you both kind of bounce off each other with Leverkusen. I can kind of see where Davis is coming from with regards to Schmidt, in the sense that even though he's done a really good job putting this Leverkusen team together over the last couple of seasons, the one thing that's really let me down for Leverkusen is the fact that they don't seem to be able to compete against teams of their quality. Their top four, I mean, their record against the other top four teams last season, which Bayern Munich, Borussia Dortmund and Borussia Mönchengladbach, was horrendous. Davis referenced that Dortmund game, which just ended up turning into a farce. And of course, in Europe, they're not particularly impressive either. So I think the club have done really, really well to put together this squad. And I think we know that simply through the amount of transfers they've signed, the fact that they've got players like Chicharito, And they've got players like Julian Brand and Kevin Volland has been an exceptional signing this summer who should add quite a lot to that team, even though he wasn't particularly impressive for Hoffenheim last season. But it remains to be seen whether Schmidt can, as Davis says, finally start winning these games against Dortmund and Gladbach, because, I mean, in my opinion, Dortmund have to beat Bayern Munich in the league if they want to finish above them. So if Leverkusen want to finish easily top third, or if they want to finish above Borussia Dortmund, they have to beat these teams, and they haven't done that yet. So that's the next step that Leverkusen have to take if they want to, you know, even just to displace Dortmund. But so Ross, I feel like you're probably the most optimistic one out of all of us here. Where would you put Leverkusen this season?
I've got them for second. I mean, I would totally accept your point about last season in terms of the results against the top four sides. But the performances were certainly very encouraging. I mean, if there are any teams that are capable of getting results against Bayern and Dortmund, then I think it is Leverkusen. I think Schmidt has proven himself to be a very tactically astute coach. I think in games, certainly the games I was at last year involving Leverkusen and Munich and Dortmund at the Bayer Arena, they were very competitive. I mean, the Dortmund game was a bit of a fluke in terms of, you know, this incident with Roger Schmidt and the referee and the game being abandoned. I mean, if that didn't happen, then it might not have been 1-0 to Dortmund. Very well could have been 2-0 to Dortmund or 3-0 to Dortmund. I mean, it doesn't really matter. But I think performance-wise, Leverkusen have shown that they are capable of going toe-to-toe with the top teams. I mean, even looking at the Champions League last year, they played Barcelona off the park for about 85 minutes before Suarez came on and scored two absolute wonder goals. I think they have got a team of genuine quality players. They've got an absolutely outstanding striker in Javier Hernandez, who you know, had an outstanding goal record last season. It took him a while to get going, but certainly a guy who is more than capable of scoring, you know, 20, 25 goals in a season, which, you know, at the end of the day, that's the most important commodity in football. But you also have Julian Brandt, you also have Charles Aranguiz, who we didn't even see at all last season. This is a guy who was, you know, probably played in the tournament at the Copa America in 2015. If he can get playing regularly, if you've got Baumgartlinger, you've got Bender, I think there's a really good blend there. And they've also got kind of two players per position. So if they do have this kind of tough schedule of Champions League and Bundesliga, this season they might be able to cope with it. I mean, last year it descended into a bit of a calamity towards the start of the new year. I mean, we had Çalhanoğlu playing as the number six for most of that point. And if I remember correctly, their start to the second half of the season was pretty terrible. And it wasn't until that game against Augsburg when they really got going again. And, okay, they got out of Europe, and that seemed to at least give them the edge going into the top four race. They put on some great performances. I remember the game against Schalke, for example, where I thought they were absolutely outstanding. It's going to be hard for them. I'm more concerned about the games against the smaller teams, to be honest with you. I think there's a little bit more doubt about Leverkusen when they play Darmstadt or something like that. I think there's more likelihood of them dropping points. You know what I mean? Like, Darmstadt are a more physical team. They'll rough it up a little bit, make it hard to play against them. Certainly in the first game they played Darmstadt last season, Darmstadt won. So for me, that would be the obstacle. I just think with Dortmund right now, it's going to take a little bit longer for this team to bed in. I mean, Stefan, obviously I get the impression that you think Dortmund will finish second, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm there as well too.
You make some fantastic points, Ross. I just think that, I think as Davis alluded to earlier on, and this is actually what I was then going to ask. In fact, I'll just jump into it now. It's a good little segue in regards to how Dortmund are going to perform. To jump back into Carlo Ancelotti and obviously his record as a coach within a league campaign, are we expecting a drop-off from Bayern in the league this season? And by that, I don't mean anything drastic. I just mean, you know, are we going...
I'm not expecting anything drastic, but I think those games... So Guardiola was a coach that put a lot of weight on league games. He would put out his best sides for most of the time. I think there was really only one time last season when Bayern played Darmstadt that they really rotated players in. Until a title is won under the Guardiola era, that's when they let off the gas. But I don't think Ancelotti is that kind of manager. I think he's a guy that likes to rotate a little bit more, that likes to make sure that his players are happy and wants to make sure that every player gets the chance to play that should be playing. He actually played Chicharito a decent amount when he was on loan at Real Madrid, and that not was not only because I think Karim Benzema got hurt that season. It was also because he wanted to keep, when there was a Champions League game that Chicharito needed to start, he wanted to make sure that Chicharito was able to play. And I think that's going to result in a lot more drop points than we're used to seeing. We're used to seeing Bayern not drop points until November or December. And in the fall, they're almost invincible against the Bundesliga. They usually around the Oktoberfest period, I mean, when people strap on their lederhosen, they are too, and they're ready to go. And that's when they perform best in the season. And I don't know, I honestly don't know if that's going to be the case. And if it's not the case, then I think it could really be a title race again.
I wonder if there will be any kind of after effect of the European Championships. I mean, there generally tends to be a little bit of an effect after a major tournament. And I'm not saying that that's going to be the reason for Bayern to struggle, but perhaps the energy levels that we saw under Guardiola might not be there this year because some of these guys are absolutely, absolutely shattered. I mean, you look at Thomas Müller's performances last year, he just looked mentally and physically exhausted. Lewandowski during the European Championship wasn't very effective either. And one thing that Guardiola, to his credit, was really good at was just getting so much out of these players. It was, there's not really many coaches who I think could do that out of a 34 game season, to get so much out of his players. And, even the tinkering in games, the in-game substitutions. I think of a couple of games, certainly against Leverkusen, where Guardiola made a change, brought on Sebastian Roda, and Roda was outstanding, and Bayern went on to win the game. I'm not too sure that what Ancelotti has the tactical acuity to do that.
Well, I'll say this. Pep Guardiola dropped Thomas Müller in maybe one of their most important games of the season, which was the first game of the Champions League semifinal against Atletico Madrid. I don't know if Carlo Ancelotti would make that move because he's really no more as a player's manager. He wants his best players on the field at all times. And he'll even move a player like Toni Kroos and Luka Modric into midfield to make sure that all of his best players are on the field. So I don't know if Ancelotti will make that drop when it needs to be made. Now, that it'll be beneficial for Bayern in other ways. I mean, Thomas Müller, when he's confident, he's one of the best players in the world. But we saw during the Euros, when he's not confident, Löw probably should have dropped him maybe in at least one game during the Euros, and he didn't. And Müller never got his confidence back, to me anyways. And I think that Ancelotti might not be that manager that would drop Thomas Müller when he needs to be dropped. And that's just one example of how that different coaching style could open the door for other teams to do well.
Yeah, I mean, here's what I think, lederhosen strap-ons aside. It's the first thing that kind of, I think the first way we can really kind of gauge this, if it is going to be Bayern Munich versus the rest, is, as Ross said, the way both of you have said is whether there is a drop in the consistency when Pep Guardiola isn't there, which I think all three of us are agreed in saying there probably will be. Now that might be, there might be reasons for that. There might be reasons why Pep's team were so good in the league, but always seemed to lack that extra 5 or 10% in the Champions League. And that might mean that we do see someone like Dortmund, or as Ross might suggest, Leverkusen can step in there and really cause some trouble. I actually, like the two of you said, I really do expect Bayern to drop more points this season. The one thing I really noticed from the Super Cup match, which even though it was, billed as a friendly and there wasn't full team from Dortmund, it was a game in which we saw, despite the scoreline, Dortmund actually dominated, in my opinion. And we saw Bayern didn't look particularly interested in closing Dortmund down any specific way. They didn't look interested in trying to attack Dortmund any specific way. It seemed as though Bayern just seemed like they just sparred with Dortmund for 90 minutes, and then all of a sudden Vidal and Thomas Müller showed up to score, as they always do. Ross, your point about whether Müller's fit or not, I think that's something that bothered me until I actually watched the Super Cup, and I thought Müller actually looked far fitter and far brighter than he had in the Euros. So I think right now we could probably assume that he is back to full fitness or something close to it. But it comes down to whether or not the team, Bayern's side, will be able to keep that consistency. And that's where I think it'll be really interesting this season, because I think that's where Dortmund might be able to catch them. I think Tuchel is the better tactical coach, and I think we saw that very, very discreetly in the Super Cup. Dortmund were playing a limited side. I mean, we've got to remember this Dortmund team had like Adrian Ramos on the wing, and they had Hasselbeck, although he played well, you know, third choice right back and things like that. And they had Bartra, who'd never played a game before with Socrates, aside from a few friendlies. So I think for me, what's going to be really interesting is the Bayern versus Dortmund games. Now, of course, that's an easy thing to say.
Well, that's going to be interesting for everybody.
Exactly, so yeah.
They are really that unique to say.
They are the top-billed games, but I don't just mean in the sense that because they'll be the most exciting. I mean because that's really the only way, in my opinion, Tuchel and Dortmund can take Bayern on, because the way when Klopp was winning Bundesliga titles with Dortmund, it large partly was down to the fact that they had the best of Bayern whenever they played them. And you know, when you look at that league season last season, Dortmund did almost everything right except whenever they came up against Bayern Munich. And I know they got the draw later on in the season. That's impressive considering this is Tuchel's first season. But we have to see Dortmund go toe-to-toe with Bayern and be able to beat them. And although they lost in the Super Cup, I actually think there's quite a lot of reasons to suggest that that might be the case this season. And add to that an Ancelotti who would be far more interested in winning the Champions League with Bayern than winning the title. Now, of course, he's never going to try and give up the Bundesliga title. He's never going to try and give up letting Dortmund take first place. But I don't think, as you've both alluded to, that he has the same concentration as Pep Guardiola does. And we might see not only Bayern drop points, but they might also lose one or two games to Dortmund over the course of the season.
We mentioned that Bayern certainly won't maintain that level of consistency under Ancelotti, but I think it's important to highlight that it's very unlikely that Borussia Dortmund are going to maintain that level of consistency in the second season. I mean, while they haven't lost 10, 15 players, they've lost three most important players, not just in terms of quality like Mkhitaryan, but they've also lost their captain, who's a leader, who's a stalwart of the defence for the last 8 seasons. Now, I'm not suggesting that Mark Bartra is not a quality defender, but he is not Mats Hummels, and Sebastian Ode is not Ilkay Gundogan, and Ousmane Dembele is not Henrik Mkhitaryan. Mario Götze isn't even Henrik Mkhitaryan. They might be able to put together a strong season. I would probably disagree with what you're saying that they have to beat Bayern, because I think if they are consistent in the other games, they will still be able to put together a very strong campaign. I just wonder if the same thing is going to apply this season to Dortmund and Bayern, that they both will not be able to maintain the level of consistency that they have been in the last few years. I mean, Pep Guardiola's team, you know, was record-breaking. Last year, Thomas Tuchel's side, one of the best seasons ever. I think probably the best ever of a runner-up. So I find it highly unlikely that Dortmund are going to get anywhere near the points tally from last season, and that's why I'm pretty confident about Leverkusen.
Well, what's interesting about Dortmund was actually, for me, was at the end of last season, was when he was really trying to go for the Europa League title, and he was starting to rotate some more players in for the Bundesliga games. And actually, their form did not drop off as much as one would expect. He used, I think, Gonzalo Castro extremely well as a player to replace the injured Ilkay Gundogan, not using him as Gundogan, but using him as just another midfielder. And I think it's one of the reasons why a player, a 17-year-old Christian Pulisic, could come in, even though he's 17 years old, and basically somewhat replicate some of the production that Dortmund needed on the flanks during the season. And I think that's one reason why Mkhitaryan had one of his best seasons as well, is because Tuchel put him in the right spot. So I think, Stefan, you said it, is the tactical acumen is definitely the greatest of the three managers that we're talking about, Roger Schmidt and Carlo Ancelotti included. But with any team that has a lot of changes, you have to wonder if they can maintain the level that they had when they had their best players in the team.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we have to really consider is, as Ross said, whether or not they can replace the players that have left. I think that'll be the key. I mean, that's obviously the main factor as to whether they can maintain that consistency. But I'm probably a little more optimistic than Ross. I don't think they're actually going to miss Gundogan that much, simply because I thought Thomas Tuchel actually did a really good job of making sure that he wasn't relying on Gundogan. I think of the three players, he was the most likely to leave. I mean, I've got suspicions that the club actually were quite well aware that he was going to leave last season. So, I mean, for large parts of the season, even when Gundogan was fit, Tuchel used him sparingly. And that's why, as Ross said, we saw the likes of Castro and Weigl and Sahin, even the three of them playing really well together, as well as Shinji Kagawa, because Tuchel didn't seem to want to use Gundogan as much. They brought in some great players to replace him as well. We have to really consider Sebastian Rode. On paper, he looks like a Bayern, you know, second-rate player, but I think he's a really, really outstanding player, and he's going to add so much energy to that midfield.
He played really well in the Super Cup, for sure. And I think he was a player that can... he actually reminded me a lot of Sami Khedira. And if Borussia Dortmund have a Sami Khedira in their team, I think it's going to be a great complement with Julian Weigl and even someone like Nuri Sahin, or a playmaker as well. I think it'd be a great complement.
Why don't we dive into the important issues? Why on earth have Dortmund spent 50 million on Mario Götze and André Schürrle?
Well, I understand
that they need to, you know, make a statement. I mean, I made a kind of point earlier on Twitter that, you guys, you mentioned Castro, fantastic player. Kagawa, fantastic player. They already had players there who were good enough to work their way into Thomas Tuchel's position. Probably arguably more malleable players than André Schürrle and Mario Götze. So I'm a little bit confused as to why the club has spent so much on two players who, let's be honest, they're not really adding. I don't think they're adding anything to this team at all that wasn't already there.
Yeah, Götze is really ironic to me because Bayern acquired Götze from Dortmund, and at the time, Dortmund needed Götze more than Bayern did. And now Dortmund is acquiring Götze from Bayern, and I think right now, because of the injuries to Kingsley Coman and Douglas Costa, Bayern need Götze more than Dortmund does. So it's really ironic the way this whole Götze narrative and the mirror images of his career between Dortmund and Bayern. And I mean, I think Tuchel can definitely get the best out of him, but I'm very curious to see the way that he contributes to this Dortmund team.
I think you're both being way too harsh on both of these players. Now, you can make a point about whether or not you know, they deserved the prices that were paid for them. I think that's an entirely different debate, and that's a debate that's probably going to come down to simple. It's going to come down to a simple point that no transfer fee this summer has made any sense in any league. Dortmund. I mean, we're talking about a league in which Bayern signed Renato Sanchez, a kid who's played, what, a handful of Champions League games for an extortionate fee.
Well, he played.
Well, he's a European Championship winner.
Okay, now, he wasn't when they signed him.
Yeah, but that's why they signed him before the European Championship for 35 million.
Ross, both of these players are World Cup winners.
Yeah, true.
So, I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't think anyone really was too happy with the money that André Schürrle cost Dortmund, except for maybe Wolfsburg. But
yes, Wolfsburg.
I don't think you could say he's not a good player. I simply do not understand this. He was a fantastic player at Leverkusen. He was a fantastic player at Mainz under Thomas Tuchel before that. He moved to the Premier League, and despite the fact he never really got a chance at Chelsea, he was a good player for Chelsea. He scored like 8 or 10 goals in his debut season for the club coming off the bench. At Wolfsburg, he was a consistent player as well, arguably one of the most consistent players for Wolfsburg in a horrendous season last year. And he comes into this Dortmund team. Sure, he's not Henrique Mkhitaryan. He's never going to be Mkhitaryan, but he is undoubtedly a player who can play 20 league games for you this season and score 10, 15 goals, or score and assist. And that's exactly what Dortmund need. I think Dortmund have actually been quite smart in the way they've tried to replace Mkhitaryan. They haven't gone out and tried to sign. They haven't gone down the Juventus line, and even though they lost their best player, they're just going to spend 50 million on another great player, which is exactly what Dortmund did when they got rid of Lewandowski. They signed Aubameyang, and then they've signed Mkhitaryan to replace Götze. And although Mkhitaryan eventually walked out two or three seasons down the line, Jurgen Klopp had already lost his job by then because he simply wasn't doing what he was brought in to do. I think the club and Tuchel have probably learned from that, and now we've seen Dembele, Götze, Schürrle come in, I guess Emery Moore to a lesser extent, and these are three, maybe four players who are more than capable of competing in the Bundesliga. I have absolutely no doubt that if Mario Götze plays 30 games in the Bundesliga for Dortmund this season, he's going to be scoring and assisting plenty of goals. He's going to be doing absolutely fine. Who's Mario Götze to you? Is he a player who's passed it? Is he a player who never had it? To me, he's a kid with all the potential in the world who never got a chance to show it at Bayern Munich. So although Götze might have cost as much as Andre Schürrle in sense of a transfer fee that might not justify the player that he might be, I think Götze signing for Dortmund on paper makes perfect sense.
This is the guy that said that Mario Götze should not go back to Dortmund because the fans are going to ridicule him.
I said I didn't think he would. I didn't think he would. I thought he'd go to Liverpool.
But I will say about Götze, I think it's very interesting because he didn't play under Guardiola, and he's right now in two games. This is the DFL Super Cup and the Pokal game. He did not play under Tuchel as well. Now, one could say he played in the Euros. He needed a little bit longer of a Euro break, but he also played in that friendly that that Dortmund had. He played, I think, 70 minutes in that game after Dortmund played in the Super Cup. So it's not like that Tuchel is not willing to use him. I'm very curious to see how easy it is for him to pick up tactical assignments, because he is a player that's going from one manager in Pep Guardiola, who was very keen on positioning the players exactly the way that he wanted to do it, and now he's going to a guy in Thomas Tuchel who does the exact same thing. So I'm curious if it's not necessarily his skill, or whether it's his whether it's his pace, or whether it's his basically the raw skills that he has, but maybe his ability to pick up the concepts that his manager wants him to use. And maybe that's why Tuchel hasn't used him yet, and maybe that's why Guardiola was a little cagey bringing him into Champions League games when everybody else was injured.
I think for me anyway, it's more the fact that his development has just stalled in the last 3 or 4 years. You know, I think he's clearly got talent, but to be honest, we've not really seen a lot of that. Even when he played for Bayern, even when he played for the German national team, there wasn't really a lot of evidence that he was a standout player. I mean, I totally agree with you. I think we might even see, and I think this is a massive statement to make, but I think you might see something similar to, you know, what Shaqiri had at Bayern, where Shaqiri just wasn't able to pick up positional play, wasn't able to understand the demands of the coach. Now, Mario Götze has already played at Dortmund. You know, not really a similar style of play. Klopp obviously wanted the high pressing, wanted the transitional play. Tuchel wants more positional play like Guardiola. So I'm very curious to see if Götze can fit into that, because he didn't at Bayern, quite clearly. I mean, Pep Guardiola did not trust him in any of the big games. So,
well, that's an interesting point, because Klopp was really more of a defensive coach. And he's a guy that wanted high pressing, and he wanted to position his defense in a way that where you could build your attack off of the strong defense that you have. So when you saw Götze playing with Royce and Lewandowski, there was that front four there that basically did all of the attacking work, and his defense was set up perfectly with occasionally Sebastian Kehl and also with Gundogan as well. That's why I'm very interested to see if Götze can really pick up tactical these small tactical details that these tactical hardworking managers want to execute.
Okay, well, that's I think we've talked that one to death, if I'm honest with you. All three teams, we all have diverging points on it, which is quite interesting, because you would think the Bundesliga is perhaps one of the most predictable in terms of who's finishing first and second. No, not in this podcast. So let's take a look at the three teams below that then, or at least the three positions below that, which have a whole host of other teams. So let's go ahead and suggest, I think Davis and I are probably okay with saying that we probably think Leverkusen are going to finish third. I'm okay in saying that, Davis?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So let's go ahead and see who's going to finish fourth, fifth and sixth. Ross, why don't you kick us off again? Just talking about that kind of group of teams just below the top three who, I mean, don't get me wrong, they could break into the top three, but for this time being, let's take a look at how they are going to look this season and where they're going to finish.
Yeah, I mean, I think let's start with Schalke. I mean, Schalke you know, certainly have been disappointing the last few years in the league. And this year is quite interesting because obviously they've acquired probably two of the best minds that they could have done from the rest of the Bundesliga. I mean, Christian Heidel, the sporting director, he basically built his own club from the bottom up. Marcus Weinziel, in a different way, almost built his own club from the bottom up in terms of taking Augsburg from newly promoted team into a team that's going into Europe. So that's, that'll be interesting to see. One thing I think is really, really important is I think Weinziel will hand responsibility to important players. I think there was, I think too often in the last few years, with Roberto Di Matteo especially, I think there was a sense of an, it's almost like an ego there. I think Di Matteo was more looking at himself, his own tactics, and I think that almost had a negative effect on the atmosphere around the club. With Weinziel, I get the impression that we could see guys like Mbolo and Max Meyer have really big seasons in terms of, you know, taking responsibility and being really key players. So, if we're talking predictions right now for fourth place, I would probably put my hat on Schalke, even with the loss of Sané, which I know that Stefan and I have had this kind of discussion quite a lot. I think it's a massive loss, but I think it's one that you can compensate for. I think Schalke have enough in the tank. You know, they've signed Koke, they've signed Abdul Rahman Baba. They're going to have a change of structure. I actually think they might be comfortable fourth. I think they might do it quite comfortably.
I'm in that boat. I think that Schalke is going to be very comfortably back in fourth place, and I'm very excited to see how Weinziel uses the squad. I think actually their most important signing was Naldo, because he is a defender that has been in the Champions League quarterfinal. He has been in the Bundesliga for a very long time. So between Naldo and Benedikt Höwedes, they have a very experienced defense. And the defense was the biggest problem, I think, under Andre Breitenreiter, because Joel Matip and Roman Neustädter were just looked completely lost at times. And just having Naldo and a healthy Benedikt Höwedes there, that already makes a huge difference for Schalke. And now we can argue about who, whether Mbolo is going to be better than Sané. I actually think that in terms of raw skills, I think Mbolo is the better player, which is why I think someone like Weinziel is the perfect player, or excuse me, the perfect manager to get the best potential out of someone like Breel Mbolo. He's going to be able to make him into a very versatile player. I think Mbolo will eventually be the focal point of that attack. And I think that he could even prompt Schalke to move on from some of their failed strikers and focus more on the midfield like Augsburg did, which they acquired a lot of midfielders under Weinziel at Augsburg. So I think that Mbolo is going to be a really key part, not only for this season, but in seasons in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very hard to argue with Schalke simply because they are a club that really, we were just talking about Leverkusen there, whether they can challenge with Dortmund. Schalke really should be challenging with Dortmund every season, and now that it looks as though they've finally got the right men in charge to manage that team, I think the sky is the limit. And as you said, they have signed some outstanding talent to add to a team that already had notable quality. Allow me to move on to Gladbach for a moment, because I think they deserve some credit as well, and I think they also, you know, possess a real ability to push for that fourth place. I think the most obvious reason is the simple fact that they've already done it. I'm actually a huge fan of André Schubert. I know a lot of Gladbach fans weren't happy with him at times last season, to my absolute dismay, because I honestly don't think the man could have done a better job of coming in and not only just replacing Lucien Favre, but deciding to morph that team into his own image as well. Gladbach under Schubert now look like Schubert's team, and it seems to be working. And they've also signed really well this season as well. They've also brought in Vestergaard, who I think should be a really good central defender. And of course, Christoph Kramer, who, even though I guess you could argue that he left Leverkusen because he wasn't guaranteed a first team spot this season, which would suggest he's not good enough. I'm not sure that's really fair. But he joins a club in Gladbach who know exactly how to get the best out of him.
And well, I think the reason for Kramer going back to Leverkusen was because of the money. But I think now that he's back, I think you're right. I think he's a very important player to this team. The one thing that I will say is I think that the loss of Granit Xhaka is really going to hurt, because not only was he the perfect six for the type of team that Schubert wanted to build, but he was also the captain of the team, which a lot of people, some people, I wouldn't say a lot of people, but some people tend to forget that even though he had this, he was really a head case, he was the captain of Leverkusen, or excuse me, of Gladbach, and he really brought that team. His development as a player coincided with Gladbach's development as a Champions League team.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Although they do have a young, outstanding player in Mahmoud Dahoud, who I think is only going to get better and better, and stick him alongside Kramer, and I think, and I think Gladbach looked good for much of the season. I mean, we have to bear in mind that, you know, they finished fourth, a few points behind Leverkusen, but they lost the first five games of the season before Schubert even had a chance to turn things around. So, you know, you take that out of the play, you take those five games out, and you say they won one or two of those, draw another one, and that's Gladbach right up there with Leverkusen last season. And that's kind of how I'm going to probably try and approach them this season. I think they're more settled. Schubert is finally getting to put his own, you know, his own say on the squad. And also bear in mind, really, really fun to watch. They play this completely they make absolutely no qualms about it. They just go out and attack. And I think that's so much fun, and it gets the best out of the Bundesliga. And sure, sometimes it might mean they lose an away game to Ingolstadt, but I think by and large, they really have a go at games, which is what we saw against Bayern. You know, we've got to remember as well that last season they beat Bayern and they drew with Bayern. So I'm not suggesting they're as good as Bayern Munich, of course, but they really, they're where I think Leverkusen or Schalke may still lack the bottle in the big games. It seems like this Gladbach team are just fearless. And even though on paper they might not look as impressive as Schalke, Leverkusen, as Dortmund, there's something about them, this steel ambition, which I think is quite interesting.
I think the biggest problem that I have with Gladbach is that they have a lot of players that are the same level of quality. You have got Jonas Hoffmann, you've got Patrick Herrmann, you've got Thorgan Hazard, and you've got Andre Hahn. And also you've got Fabian Johnsons as well. Those are players that play similar positions that play at a similar quality. And the guy that really makes the difference is the two guys that make the difference are Lars Stindl and Raphael. But if one of those guys is injured and you have to rely on that tier of quality, I think that could really bother Gladbach to stay consistent as an attacking team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to come across as a negative Nelly again, but I have to admit, as much as Schubert has done, you know, a fine job in getting Gladbach into the Champions League, and that's totally, you know, worth a lot of credit. Defensively last season they were atrocious. They were absolutely terrible, and Schubert has tried to take a side that was defensively solid under Favre for so long in a 4-4-2 formation. He's trying to implement his 3-4-3 formation, and even at this point, as we, you know, just tie up the Champions League qualifiers, it doesn't really look that much better. Now, you said, Stefan, that they are all at attack, and I think that's completely to their detriment. They lack a balance, perhaps a certain pragmatism. Interesting to see what kind of effect Tony Janschke will have on the defence. I mean, he's not a natural centre-half, in my opinion. I think he's a better fullback because he doesn't have the aerial power to be a dominant centre-back because he's so small. But I think in terms of organisation, in terms of communication, that'll be really important, because I remember actually going to the first game of last season, and, you know, they played the two young guys, Elvedi and Schultz, and one thing that really stood out for me was neither of them communicated at all. There was just no communication in that team. Christensen, from what I've seen, looks like a steady centre-back. I'm not sure if he is, you know, maybe the same quality as Vestergaard, but for me, I still have massive doubts about our defence. That's why I think they'll finish down in sixth. Also coupled with the fact that they have a Champions League campaign, which almost certainly will dominate for them. You know, last year, the Champions League campaign was disrupted by the fact that they changed coach halfway through it. Had they had Schubert for the whole tournament, they might have qualified. They were that good in the last half of the campaign. So I think the Champions League will be a real distraction for them this year. Depth-wise, still not sure. You mentioned Jonas Hoffman and Patrick Herrmann. Patrick Herrmann, unfortunately, has a lot of injury issues. Jonas Hoffman, I'm not sure he's the required quality to be a top four side. So, sorry, Gladbach fans, but I'm not holding out for a great season.
I think you mentioned the defensive issues. I think that's why Vestergaard is such an important new part of this team, because he had to guide this Bremen defense that was just so putrid around him. And he himself is upgrading to a much better team. But he has, even though he's so young, he has those leadership qualities that I think is very rare to find. I think that's why that Gladbach wanted, were so keen to get him. So I think Vestergaard could be a real key to their defensive issues.
Yeah, sure. But I think the concern I would have even about Vestergaard is that he's coming from a team that didn't defend well as a collective last year and going into a back three. Now, I'm not saying that there's a massive, I'm not saying that, players shouldn't be able to adapt to different formations, but to go from a side like Bremen, that was very gung-ho with a two-man centre-back pairing, to going into a back three, where the back three is so important because it moves and it shifts across the pitch. I mean, there are only two or three teams in the Bundesliga that play with this positional play idea, and it's Bayern, Dortmund, and a little bit of Mönchengladbach. I think that's a big challenge for Vestergaard to adapt to that. I mean, I'm not surprised that he was on the bench for the first game. Don't know if that's going to be a consistent thing at the start of the season, but I think Gladbach might have another topsy-turvy campaign. They didn't keep a clean sheet until the last game of the season away from home, so I'm very curious to see if they can still achieve their bare minimum expectation, which would be qualifying again for Europe.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, Ross, you think Gladbach will finish sixth and you think Schalke will finish fourth. Who are the teams that you and Davis yourself, who you guys think will be in and amongst it for the top, for the next three positions after the top three?
So I've tipped Mainz for fifth. That does sound a little bit ridiculous, but I really don't think it is. I don't think it'd be even a surprise. This Mainz team has been so consistent for so long. Everyone keeps writing them off, but they are, you know, tactically solid, very flexible side. They've kept hold of their best players and they've got stronger. You know, they've got Cordoba, they've got Muto, they've got Mali. Okay, I would totally accept that they have lost their goalkeeper in Loris Karius. That's a big loss in terms of presence. Not sure about the replacement being as up to that standard. But in midfield, even though they've lost Julian Baumgartlinger, who was probably one of the most underrated players in the Bundesliga last season, they've got some interesting players coming through. Rodriguez from Galatasaray, I think, has looked impressive so far. Serdar in midfield is a young player from their academy who's just come through. So they've got some quality there. But I think the key is the coach. I mean, Martin Schmidt is certainly the key to this Mainz side. I think it's very interesting because he's not a conventional football coach at all. No. I mean, this is a guy who had basically no kind of football career. I mean, this is a guy who's interested in skiing, winter sports, obviously coming from basically the foot of the Alps. And he basically said one day, oh, you know what, I actually quite like football. I'm going to be a football coach. And his main interest is actually the man management side of things. It's not even the game itself. He's more interested in dealing with the human beings. And you look at the way that he prepares his sides. You know, last year in the winter break, basically said to the players, you can only bring two things and we're going to hike halfway up the Alps. This year, I think Davis mentioned just before we came on air that they went to Colorado for preseason to play in high altitude.
I was going to say, for those who aren't really that versed on American geography, so Mainz went to Colorado, and even though they didn't play top sides in the preseason, Denver, which is in Colorado, it's the big city in Colorado, that is a mile or 1.6 kilometers above sea level. So if you go any higher, you have a little lot of trouble to breathe. And an intense Bundesliga fan were to follow any of the things that they were doing, Martin Schmidt was really working his side hard, doing double training sessions in high altitude. And the biggest thing that he wants is that he wants his side to work harder than their opponents, which is why they signed someone like Rodriguez from Galatasaray, who's known for being an aggressive player. That's what a lot of people have written so far about Rodriguez and what we've seen in the preseason so far. And they've also added this guy, Gamabin, who is from, he's from the French league, and he's actually a central defender, but he's going to be part of that solution in midfield. So that is a team that's really trying to replace that aggressiveness that Julian Baumgartlinger had and that he's taking with him to Leverkusen. And I think that they could maintain, but I mean, it's a lot of, like I said, with Dortmund, it's still when you bring a lot of players in, sometimes they don't click right away.
Davis, what about Wolfsburg?
Wolfsburg is interesting because to me, I think they're actually a little bit underrated because I think that Mario Gomez is the perfect player to come in for their team. Bosch Dost is a pedestrian striker. I think that's been the case for a long time. I know that he had his run when Kevin De Bruyne was in behind him, but Mario Gomez he's a goal poacher. That is what he does. That is what he's always been good at. And you see the types of guys they brought in too. I mean, Błaszczykowski is not a winger that is meant to score. He's a winger that's meant to help set up the striker, which is why he was so important to Robert Lewandowski's career and why he succeeded at Dortmund for so long. I think that they're a very interesting team. I think that, but at the same time, there is a lot of unrest at that club. And I think that Dieter Hecking is on a very short leash now. And not only him, but I think Klaus Allofs is on a very short leash now because of the squad decisions that he's had to make. We've mentioned, of course, there might be a monetary issue now with Volkswagen, but I think that Wolfsburg could improve on the way that they performed last season. I'm just afraid it's not going to be enough to get them back in the European picture.
Yeah, I think I'm really interested to see how Wolfsburg do this season because, you know, the entire narrative this summer has been that of utter and absolute destruction. And we've seen, despite the fact that, you know, they've actually once again been able to hold on relatively to the key players in their team. And by that, I mean Julian Draxler and I mean Rodriguez. And, you know, the actual structure of the team is still there. Gustavo, that's who I was thinking of, sorry, is the third. As you said, Mario Gomez, I think Mario Gomez is going to be a great signing. And I think the other players that they've signed as well are going to be really interesting as well. Gerhardt is a really good young player who can play in the central midfield there. And I'm really intrigued to see whether Błaszczykowski can get his career back on track as well. So I don't think we're going to see this Wolfsburg team fall apart nearly as much as expected. Last season they were expected to challenge in the champion in the top four, even with Bayern. They were meant to go toe-to-toe with Bayern Munich, some people were predicting. And instead we saw them finish in mid-table and have a very impressive Champions League campaign this season without the Champions League act. And perhaps with a smaller, more modest squad, we might see a team that's just much better at working hard and picking up the hard points.
The biggest thing about Wolfsburg you have to remember is they lost their two starting center backs. And when you lose a pair like that, that's one of those positions that it's really tough when you lose both of your starting center backs, especially with the relationship that Dante and Naldo had. Now, you also have to keep in mind that actually what I'll say too is the doubts that I have about Roger Schmidt is the same doubts that I have about Dieter Hecking. I don't know if he's the right manager to take this team to the next level. I know that he's won a cup, and he actually, I think, is better in cup competitions than managing a full campaign. And I think that's really going to be the problem because you don't compete in some of the big cup competitions if you aren't good in the league as well. So I'm really curious to see if Dieter Hecking is still the coach of Wolfsburg by the end of the season.
So we've talked about the top six in exquisite detail. And I think before we finish up, let's just take a look at some predictions. Very quickly, guys, I think we're probably all agreed on who we think are probably going to get relegated, at least two of the teams. I think I'm right in saying Ingolstadt and Darmstadt are the two teams who we really expect to go down. Any objections from there?
I think Ingolstadt, I'm very to see how Kaczynski does at Ingolstadt, but they did lose a lot of important players. So I'm okay with saying that they're one of the clubs that are picked to go down.
Ross?
No objections. I think they're both destined for relegation.
Okay, and I think you're both in disagreement over whether Frankfurt or Freiburg are going to go down as well, which would be interesting. I think Ross is quite angry at the thought of Freiburg anywhere near the relegation spot. Am I right in saying that, Ross?
Yeah, I'm absolutely appalled, Davis. I mean, I mean, I've got Freiburg to finish like ninth in the table. I think they've got a strategy, they've got a plan, they've got consistency. They've added some good players, they've got a good coach. Yeah, I think they'll do quite well this year.
Teams that have a bad defense usually are down towards the relegation zone.
Do they have a bad defense, though?
They're bringing in a 20-year-old Turkish center back that was playing in the second division last year because they needed more support in their defense.
Yeah, but that's because the three players are injured, did they not?
Yeah, and that's a problem too.
And they also
got rid of Emmanuel Hoon, who is one of their, who has been a.
But they have Nils Petersen. Come on.
Yeah, and Nils Petersen has never proven himself fully in the Bundesliga. So I think that you actually look at all the relegation teams, one of them tends to be one of the teams that got promoted. So Braunschweig was one of the teams. A few seasons ago, Düsseldorf only lasted a season as well. I think there's going to be one of the teams that are promoted. It was promoted. I think is going to go down. And last year was the exception when Hanover and Stuttgart went down. So I think if one of the teams that's going to be promoted between Leipzig and Freiburg is going to go down, I think it's going to be Freiburg because I think their defense and their goalkeeping situation is absolute shambles.
Okay. I'm absolutely disgusted.
Okay, so Ross, we're all agreed on Darmstadt and Ingolstadt. Davis thinks it's going to be Freiburg. You think it's going to be...
Frankfurt. I mean, it's a difficult one because I actually have thought about this probably more than I thought about the other predictions. As you can tell by having Mainz and Freiburg so high. I just think between sort of 9th and 10th and 16th, I think it's just complete chaos. I mean, there's really little to call between any of those teams. I mean, we were talking about Bremen potentially having a good season after they just signed Max Kruse. Now Max Kruse is injured. Surely Bremen are one of those candidates.
Yeah,
Cologne haven't added well. But I think I look at the Frankfurt team and the players they've brought in. You know, they've brought in a lot of younger players. Guys on loan from Manchester United, Varela, for example. I just don't know if that's the quality that they need. Michael Hector's come in from Chelsea. I mean, we've seen this experiment of signing Chelsea reserve players already at Hamburg and it didn't work out. So I don't really have any optimism for Frankfurt if that's their strategy. Certainly brings them a lot of youth, but I'm not sure if it's going to work.
I'm going to go with Werder Bremen for mine simply because I would agree with you with Frankfurt only if it wasn't for the fact that I actually think they looked notably better when Niko Kovac came in last season, and I think with a full pre-season behind them, I think they're going to look a lot better. They're not a team with quality, there's no doubt about that, but they didn't play better, they just worked so much harder under Kovac, and I think it's really hard for me to condemn a team that look as though they really do work hard. A team that don't look like they're working hard at all right now are Werder Bremen. I was really impressed when they signed Max Kruse, actually, but now that he's injured, and I think I'm right in saying Pizarro's also injured for some time. And the way that Pizarro really carried that team for large parts of the season last year, I really don't think they could be down and out before these two players even get back to kicking a ball, you know, with any great composure. So I'm going to go ahead and say Werder Bremen. So that is our predictions. Before we jump on to back up, and we'll round off things with our top six predictions from 1 to 6. But before I do that, guys, we kind of skipped over the middle of the table there simply because it's absolute madness. But off the top of your head, is there any one specific thing from those teams we haven't mentioned that you're really looking forward to seeing? It could be a player specifically, it can be a coach, it can be an entire team if you want. But those teams between, you know, the top six and the bottom three, is there anything in there that you really think people or fans should keep an eye on this season?
Well, I already touched on Freiburg. Davis certainly disagrees with that. But I think Hamburg are really interesting this year. I mean, I think it's easy to maybe underrate the job that Labbadia has done there in the last few years because they don't play particularly aesthetically pleasing football. But, you know, if you look at what Labbadia has done, one season keeps them up, second season fairly stable position. Now, the third season is where they really have to push on. I mean, it's really worth adding that this is a team that is, well, this is a club, sorry, that is like 150 million euros in debt. They really need to start qualifying for Europe very, very soon, because they have money coming in from an outside investor, which I don't think is kind of well known in the international press. They've spent 14 million or so on Filip Kostic, is the record transfer fee. They've brought in Halilovic from Barcelona for 5 million. They've spent 4 million on Bobby Wood. It's a big layout for a team like Hamburg, who were mid-table last year and obviously had relegation problems the year before. So they really have to get results. And one thing about Labbadia is that, you know, he has a track record of getting the collective to play really, really well. Defensively, very, very solid. And certainly when you look at players like Lewis Holtby, for example, who in the last 12 months or 18 months has really kind of progressed in his career. If you add that to Kostic and Wood and maybe Lasoga if he gets back to full fitness, I think they'll do okay. I don't think they'll be great, but they will probably have another solid mid-table finish, and that will probably be enough to give Labbadia pass marks.
It's funny you said Hamburg, because they were my pick as well, because I actually think that they're going to finish sixth. I think they're going to go into Europe, because like you said, I think that Bruno Labbadia is the manager.
Davis, do you know what you've just done there? You may have eclipsed Ross's prediction from last season that Stuttgart would finish in the Champions League.
Actually, I had Stuttgart in the Europe last year, so you can take my Hamburg position with a grain of salt. But I mean, Filip Kostic, I think, is a player that they really needed. They didn't have, they had Ivo Ilicevic playing on that left flank. I mean, and he even did pretty well under Bruno Labbadia. I'm very excited to see what Labbadia can do with Filip Kostic on that flank. I think Bobby Wood is a poacher that Lasaga is not. I think that Aaron Hunt has that veteran presence, as does Johan Giroud. And even though that Emir Spahic is a dirtbag sometimes, he is also a player that has played in the Champions League before. And he's a player that many don't realize that didn't cost that very much. So I think that Hamburg, they've spent a lot over recent seasons, and they have not spent well at all. But I think this summer, that if with Labbadia at the helm, I think that they could make huge strides this season. And I think that, and like you said, I think they also have to, because the investments that they put in, they really have to start showing results.
Well, to make it a trifecta, I actually was going to go for Hamburg as well. So that, I guess, that goes to show who their standout are. I think Bobby Wood, I've been waiting for Bobby Wood to sign for Hamburg for, you know, all season. He's been ripping it up in his 5 Bundesliga. But just to offer some differences, I'm going to say that I'm really excited to see how Duda does at Hertha as well, who signed from Liga Warsaw. I actually think Hertha are going to be okay. I think a lot of people were worried that, you know, second season syndrome, they're going to drop right off. They've done really well to hold on to the players that did really well last season. Obviously, Ibisevic has now signed a full-time contract with the club.
And the captain, too.
Yes, exactly. And the whole spine of that team that did so well last season is still there. And if John Anthony Brooks can keep fit, I really think they're going to stay absolutely fine in that mid-table spot. But of course, I cannot believe no one mentioned Leipzig.
So here's why I didn't mention Leipzig. It's because they have a lot of players. They kept pretty much the same team, but very, very few of those players have Bundesliga experience. And I think that Bundesliga experience is a huge disadvantage for them, because they have exciting players like Yusuf Poulsen, from this Danish striker that they have, that they had for pretty many years. They have David Selke, of course. They have Emil Fosberg, who's got a lot of attention. He's played also for the Swiss national team, along with Ibrahimovic. And they got this guy, Naby Keita, which by very, very suspect reasons, they got Naby Keita. And also Sabitzer is a very exciting young Austrian process, although the way they acquired him was very suspect as well. But you have to consider the fact that they have very little Bundesliga experience in their team.
Two words, Davis. Timo Werner.
What about Tino Werner? He was this leading man at Stuttgart, and they went down.
No, I know. I'm just a big fan. I'm really excited. No, I am genuinely really excited to see how they do. I think they're a team of genuine quality. They've got an outstanding coach as well. And yeah, I think they're easily going to be mid-table, which is going to cause all sorts of trouble. So I think that's going to be exciting.
Well, I think Hasenhüttl will keep them up. I think that is probably what he's going to do. But I don't think – I would not expect – I would be very surprised if Leipzig was in the top 10 in their first season.
I think it'd be bottom half.
Okay. Well, let's finish things off then. Guys, I hope you have your top six in front of you. I'll go first since I've been following you two all evening. So, I have Bayern first, Dortmund second, Leverkusen third, Schalke fourth, Gladbach fifth, and Mainz sixth. Davis, what have you got?
Something similar. I have, if at least in the top four, I have obviously Bayern and Dortmund as the first two, and then Leverkusen third and Schalke fourth. I'm really excited for them. I think Gladbach will finish outside of the Champions League. I think Hamburg, like I said, could finish sixth if things click the right way. And I would not be surprised if Wolfsburg made it to seventh, although that spot could go to a cup finalist too. So.
Yeah, for me, it would be Bayern number one, Leverkusen two, Dortmund in third place, Schalke in fourth, Mainz in fifth, and Mönchengladbach in sixth.
Okay, well, there we go then. Minor changes to a very general theme, but I think we're all agreed in saying that we've got plenty to be excited about this season. Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. That was number 10 of this series. We do have some very exciting things coming for you in the future, but just as of yet, we're going to keep them under wraps. So do stay tuned to this feed. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter at the Tribune Podcast. And we're also at a similar address. We're on Facebook as well. Guys, do you want to give a quick shout out to where people can get you on Twitter?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter at RostonBar93. Follow me on there.
I'm on Twitter at Davis_VanOpdorp.
And I'm on at SBinkowski. So once again, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you soon. And let's look forward to a very good Bundesliga season.